Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Debbie Rowley.
And you're listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, that twice weekly podcast for people who stab ground cloth. So
I don't stab ground cloth. I use a tapestry needle, which is blunt.
Oh, so you gently pass your thread through this. Okay, right.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And, okay. And I very carefully ease it in with my laying tool.
Okay, good for you. I stab.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. You just ease it in all you want. I stab.
Okay.
Okay, so this past weekend was the Nashville market, and videos are up and going up, and whatever podcasts. So check out the YouTube channel and WeTalkFiber.com to see all the new intros from the Nashville market and my little video tours of people's designs. And what a fun time at that market. That's a good time. So we got to get more needlepoint people in this thing. There aren't enough.
Yeah, I used to show at Nashville, and, you know, mostly what I do is counted canvas, and I discovered that, you know, even people who had bought from me in the past, I would see them walking around and they would never come in my suite.
Oh.
And so the return on investment was just not there.
Yeah.
And so I have stopped showing there, and I don't know if Curdy ever showed at Nashville. I know that Kathy with Needle Delights goes, Nancy, from Nancy's Needle used to go. I don't know if they're still there or not, but it, you know, the needlepoint people have two fabulous markets now. They have one in the spring and they have one in the fall. And so I think that is where they're focusing their efforts.
Right, right.
Is on those two shows. And it seems that the buyers at Nashville are more interested in primitives, Quakers, samplers, that kind of thing. I'm none of those things. So
yeah, there's a lot of that. And it, I mean, it's just heavily a cross-stitch show across the board.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is. But, I used to have good markets, and it just kind of dropped away. And so I thought, you know, it's not worth the time and effort that it requires to go and show. It's not worth it. So I stopped.
Yep.
I miss it. I miss seeing everybody. I miss seeing what's new, the new threads, the new accessories. I miss seeing all of that. And I miss seeing all of the retailers and the other designers and stuff. But, you know, I can't go and play.
Right.
You got to go work.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, that's the decision you have to make with any trade show of any kind.
Exactly.
Just for the expense, do I get enough out of it?
Yes.
And if you don't, you just can't justify it. Because that's, you know, people see you exhibiting, and you really, as an attendee, you really don't realize the expense that goes into attending and setting up for a trade show of any size.
It's
significant.
And, you know, because Nashville's a cash and carry, you have to have everything ready to go in advance.
Right.
And so it's not just printing the charts and getting them prepared and the new designs and the models. And you also have to put a lot of thought and effort into, how am I going to display this?
Right.
And there's some expense involved in putting a display together.
Yep.
And then you also have to have your printed materials, your order forms, your brochures, your business cards. You know, there's a lot of expense involved.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's just it. And that's for me. Now this was my second year, a second Nashville show, and that is as much the fun as seeing the designs, is seeing how people set up their shops in those suites.
Yeah.
You know, it's very creative a lot of times.
Oh, yeah. Extremely so. Extremely so.
So, okay. Well, yep. Videos, podcasts, did as much as I could in the time allotted. And so I hope people enjoy it and, you know, support those designers. They need help. They don't need help. They need your support.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Order from your local needlework store and keep things going. So that's, yeah, fun time there. All right. So while I was doing that, let's see. Oh, no. Prior to that, you were in Scotland.
Yes.
Now, last we talked, you were getting ready to leave for Scotland. And I have been dying to hear about your Scotland trip.
Well, it was, we were there for 2 weeks, and Rod has, his company has an office there. We stayed about three blocks away, and so he would get up every morning, walk off to work, and then walk back every afternoon. And so, you know, we would have dinner and stuff like that. And so that left me free during the day. And so I had planned some things. And the first thing I wanted to say is, if you look, there's embroidery everywhere.
Now, in Scotland.
This was true when we were in Ukraine. I have found embroidery in North Dakota, not at Nordic Needle, but at Native American History Museum. There was embroidery there. I've seen embroidery in New Mexico. I've seen embroidery everywhere. You just have to be looking. You have to have your eyes open and be looking for it. So, that being said, we went to Edinburgh Castle the first weekend and went to the Scottish National War Museum. Do you know that there's a lot of gold work on the uniforms? And so I'm sitting there and everybody else is looking at, oh, look at the, you know, the swords and stuff like that. And I'm going, there's gold work on that uniform.
I'm Debbie. I don't care about your swords. There's gold work.
There's gold work. And so I'm sitting there with my face pressed up against the glass looking at the gold work and the different things that were embroidered, which is, you know... And on the way to the castle, there was a working textile mill.
Ooh.
So, of course, we had to go, and it was Sunday, so they weren't working. But we went down, and we looked at down three flights. Okay, and everything in Scotland is hilly, okay? Up and down, up and down. And so this textile mill, you walked in on one floor and then went down four flights to the textile mill.
Holy smokes.
Then we had to come back up four flights. But
right.
Anyway, that's where they're making plaids and stuff. And
oh.
I learned that people can create their own plaids if they want to, you know, because we think about the tartans and the clans and things like that. Well, people have plaids created for their weddings.
Oh.
Yeah. And, you know, other events, you know, a christening or whatever, and they will commission a plaid to be made for them. So anyway, that was really interesting. And then we also went to the royal yacht, the Britannia, which is moored in Edinburgh. And did you know there's embroidery on the yacht?
Why not? Why not?
Well, Queen Elizabeth's, her bedroom, you know, it's all on display. And this is a royal yacht where they actually, the royal family used to, you know, go make round the world trips and Princess Diana and Prince Charles honeymooned on the yacht. I mean, it was, there's a lot of history involved, but yeah. It's now on display. Well, in the Queen's bedroom, her headboard is embroidered.
Well, that, why not? Mine is too. Oh, wait, no, it isn't.
They're going, I can't see it close enough. I want to get in the room so I can look at it closely. So we found embroidery there. And then we went to Stirling Castle, and Stirling Castle is really kind of neat. And again, up and down, up and down, up and down. Yeah. But one of the first things we saw was Tapestry Studio exhibit.
Uh-oh.
All righty then.
Uh-oh.
Gone through the castle and all that with a guide, and then went to the very end of the castle grounds, which was downhill, to the Tapestry Studio exhibit. So, and it was really interesting. They had a loom set up and showed how it was being used. It was a video. And I saw DMC rappers. I was just like, oh, I know what this is. But what they had done was they recreated the tapestries for the Queen's Privy Chamber. And it was the Hunt of the Unicorn or something like that. Anyway, they recreated these tapestries, and they're hanging in the Queen's Privy Chamber. So we went through the exhibit, and then Rod goes, well, you know, we've got to go back up and look at the tapestries again, because now we know what we're looking at.
Right, right. Yeah.
And like, why wasn't the Tapestry Studio exhibit right by. But it wasn't. It was in the furthest building away that you could be and still be on the castle grounds. And so
Yeah.
back up the hill, back up the stairs. Like, and it was interesting too, because when we were walking up the hill to get to the castle, you know, it's through the town of Stirling, and so there's all these shops and everything, and I'm looking in the shop windows as we're going by. Lo and behold, there's two women sitting in one of the shop windows. One of them is embroidering. She has her work in a hoop. The other one was winding DMC floss onto bobbins.
Oh no, there you go.
It's like, I can we go in here? And Rod's like, no, we got to get up the hill. We got to go to the castle. And I'm like, I want to go in here and talk to the people. But I didn't get a chance to do that. But
No.
here again, embroidery just right there.
Yeah.
And
Oh man. You couldn't say so, you had to pass on the women who were stitching to
it was okay. And then let's see, I had emailed a friend of mine who lives in Edinburgh. He is a member of A&G, and he and his wife attend national seminars, and I'd met him there. And so I had emailed him, would you like to get together and have lunch? And he was telling me that the National Museum of Scotland, which was about, you know, half a mile from my hotel, had a display of Scottish samplers.
Oh boy. Oh
So
boy. Oh boy.
I went, I saw the Scottish samplers, I met Jonathan and Jane Beth for lunch, and we talked embroidery some more. The Scottish samplers are really interesting. They belong to an American collector, and she has like 500 samplers. And so
Okay.
about 70 of them were on display. And of course, you know, I'm not really into samplers. I don't stitch them. I look at them and can't tell the difference one from another unless there's something really unusual about it. But I did find a sampler there that I really studied, and it was a sewing sample. So girls who wanted to get jobs as a seamstress or, you know, to do fine sewing for a family or whatever would produce a sampler that showed their skills. So it had like a straight seam and basting and joining two pieces of fabric together and a buttonhole and a button that was, they actually made the buttons because purchase buttons were extremely expensive. And so they needed to know how to make a button. So there was a, you know, a button on this sampler. And I really enjoyed looking at that. They had a couple of the samplers on display framed in glass, so you could see the front and the back.
Oh,
And
that would be interesting.
yeah, now one of them was very meticulous, and it was difficult to tell the front from the back. And the other one looked like one of my things because there were thread carries all over and knots and all this other kind of stuff. But I enjoyed looking at those. Then the
I'm
probably
Debbie. I relate to that one.
yes, because you know, if it doesn't show from the front, and it didn't, it doesn't matter what the back looks like. And so, but the most fun thing that I did was I went to the Weems School of Needlework. Now, I was pronouncing it wrong. It's spelled Weyms. Oh, shoot, I can't remember how it's spelled. Weyss.
Weyss, Fiona Weems, the Weems Castle. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
You know
I
how I
was
know
pronouncing
that?
how?
Because Sunday's guest is Philippa Turnbull, and Philippa knows Fiona and recommended that I try to get Fiona to do a show with us.
Well, you should. I've
So
also
there,
met
you know, there's small world for you right there.
Fiona, and she was delightful. But I met several of the. So when you go to the, and it was, I was pronouncing it Weemis, but it's Weems. The Y is not pronounced. And this is how I know this, because on Sunday night, Rod and I were in a Mexican restaurant in Edinburgh, and this couple, these
Okay,
two.
wait a minute. Wait a minute. You can't just blow by that.
Well, let me just say it was not like Mexican food, like anything I've ever seen.
Okay.
Okay. We'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
There was guacamole, so I was happy. But anyway, these two ladies came in and were sitting at the table right beside us. And Rod's looking at one of the ladies and says, I know her. I know her. And it turns out she works in his office in Edinburgh.
Oh.
And so we were talking to them and they were asking, what are you going to do while you're here? And I was, you know, explaining that, you know, I said I was going to go to the Wemyss School of Needlework. And this one is looking really puzzled. And she said, oh, you mean Weems?
Mm.
And I said, yes. Well, she's from there.
Uh-huh.
So that's how I know. So anyway, I looked up the bus schedule, figured out which bus to take, and rode the bus and went. And from the website, the Weems School of Needlework on Wednesday mornings has open stitching where you can bring any project you want, just like any shop in the United States where they have an open stitching. So I thought, okay, I'm going to go. And I had also arranged to take a private lesson. And I thought it was going to be the first Wednesday I was there, but she never received my confirmation email. So I had to go back the second Wednesday. Darn. Anyway.
Oh, no. So you were forced to go twice?
I was forced to go twice.
Well, are you okay?
Yeah, I think I'll recover.
Okay. All right.
But anyway, I got to stitch with these lovely Scottish ladies who were stitching. And, of course, what I was doing did not look like anything at all like what they were doing.
Right, right.
But they were stitching. I was stitching. We had a lot of commonality. We enjoyed talking to each other. And, you know, I oohed and aahed over what they were doing. They oohed and aahed over what I was doing and just had a lovely time. It was interesting because one of the ladies who works there is named Sheila, and it was her birthday. And so someone had brought in cakes for Sheila's birthday. So we had cake and coffee, and it was wonderful. And then the next week when I went back, we had cake and coffee again. I was like, do y'all have cake every time? They said, oh, no, no, this is special. Okay, well, I've been here twice. There's been cake twice. So.
So what were they stitching?
They were, one of them was working on black work.
Mm.
They were doing a lot of basket weave type things, mm-hmm. needlepoint. And I, it was this big, huge table. There were probably 10 or 12 ladies, and I didn't get to talk to all of them, but you know, they were working on different things. And they teach several things at the Weems School of Needlework. They teach crewel work. And I would say that probably mostly what the women were working on was crewel embroidery. And I don't really do crewel embroidery because I don't react well with wool. And crewel is with wool.
Right.
I itch and sneeze, and it's not a happy time.
Yeah, that'll just kind of suck the fun right out of it, won't it?
You know, I'll stick with cottons and silks. And they also teach gold work, and they also, I think they do commissioned pieces. One of the things that I found really interesting was when people find embroidery when they're cleaning out an attic or a storage chest or something, they bring it to the Weems School. And so they have this massive collection of needlework.
Mm.
Of all different kinds that, you know, they don't have the space to display it, but they had several samplers on the walls. They had a beaded wedding gown. Let me just tell you, I don't know if my granddaughter would fit in that wedding gown. It was so small. But, and they had some embroidered men's jackets and, you know, various things that were on display. It was really interesting. And so I did not get to take a class the first Wednesday I was there, but I did go back the second Wednesday, and I was able to take a gold work class with Louise Dawson, who is one of the employees at the school. And she has her certificate from the Royal School and very knowledgeable, lovely young woman. And I really enjoyed I've done several gold work things before. I did learn some things. It was very good. And, so, you know, I was happy I did it. But, you know, they do have a regular class schedule. They also have canvas work. I didn't see the need to take a class in canvas work.
Probably not. Probably not. Yeah. So what? Okay. What's I have this mental picture of. I mean, you're in a full blown castle, right?
No.
No.
No. There is a castle. The Weems Castle is the school is on the grounds of the castle, okay. But it's far away. I never even saw the castle. Okay.
But it's still on the grounds of the castle. Okay.
It's on the grounds of the castle.
Okay.
It's a very old building, low ceilings, low doorways, that kind of thing, completely surrounded by fence and then woods. And from what I understand, there's a cottage next door to the school where the former headmistress of the school now lives. She's retired. She's like 96 or something like that. And she lives there.
Mm.
And Fiona Weems is married into the family, and she's now the caretaker for the school.
Okay.
And the Weems School is a little different from the Royal School of Needlework. The Royal School has a different charter. The Weems School was founded in the 1800s to teach the local girls an employable trade.
Mm, okay.
So that they could get a job as a seamstress or, you know, doing embroidery for a family or, you know, those kinds of things.
So this is a true trade school as opposed to...
Yeah.
Chartered to further and keep, you know, further the arts kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
And, you know, now with the age of machinery, there's no need for fine hand sewing like that, but they do still do bespoke pieces and some repairs and things like that. It was a very interesting place. And I, you know, when we returned to Scotland, which, we don't know when that will be, but when we return to Scotland, I will be going back. I noted it's
when we return, not if we return. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, Rob's already been four times.
Oh, then he owes you a couple.
Well, yeah. You know, it's just when I can work it in with my schedule to go. And it happened that I could work it in this time. But who knows if he goes in June, there's no way I can go.
Yeah. Yeah. Got those other obligations, yes.
I've got my own work that I have to do, but, you know, we will be going, we are talking about when we return, and we're going to go explore Glasgow, and the Royal School has a satellite campus in Glasgow.
Oh.
And so maybe I'll get to take a class from the Royal School and go to Glasgow, but anyway.
What was the class like? I mean, is it in this big, dark, darkish room? With a big table, or do you sit at individual desks? What's it like to take a class in a place like that?
Well, where the school is the stitching room. You know, they have a smaller room where the office is and where people have cake and coffee because they don't want to bring food into the stitching room. The stitching room was like a huge table covered with green. I want to say felt, but I don't think it was felt. It was probably wool, and very well lit. There were lights, like stitching lights at every chair. So you didn't have to bring your own light. You could use one of the lights that they had. They had Lowry needlework stands that you could use if you wanted to. So, you know, very modern, very well lit, but surrounded by antique Scottish samplers in a beaded wedding gown and, you know, all this other stuff. And what I did was a private class. So there weren't other people in the class with me. It was just me and Louise. And they had all of the supplies for gold work there. She packaged up all of my supplies for me, these little cellophane envelopes, and labeled them so I'd know what was what so that I could finish it when I got home and things like that. It was, you know, just one-on-one. But they do have classes there, and they have their class schedule on their website. So, and they were getting, someone came to look and see what I was doing, and, oh, can she learn to do that too? And Louise was telling her they've got a gold work class scheduled sometime in March, and she could take the class then. So
in a normal class, everybody would be sitting around this big table covered in green cloth.
Right. Okay. With a Lowry stand and a stitching lamp.
So you just walked in with needle and scissors and...
Yeah, well, I had taken stitching things with me because I was on some deadlines for proposals. And so I had to get those done. So I spent a little time in, not all the time I was there was in my hotel room stitching, but I did spend some time in my hotel room stitching. And because I had to, you know, that's all there is to it. But I had taken a couple of projects with me and the materials that I needed, except for the stretcher bar.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, we solved that issue. But I had two projects with me with the threads that I needed and my regular stitching tools and my portable lamp that folds up and is battery operated. And, you know, I had my stuff with me. So I brought my stuff with me.
Okay.
To the school.
Mm-hmm. And then they have all the materials for the actual project.
Yes, they had the stuff for the gold work. And they had, I picked out the project I wanted to do. She asked me what ground did I want to do it on and opened this drawer where she had all this beautiful silk fabric. And I said, oh, let's do the light blue. So then she transferred the pattern to the light blue silk and mounted it with the backing muslin into a hoop for me. And all of that. So, you know, I bought the hoop, I bought the project and the fabric, and she packaged up enough gold work supplies for me so that I could finish the project and the instructions and stuff like that. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, this probably won't come out right, but I have to know, or I have to try anyway. Is it a teacher such as that in a school such as that? Is she pretty relaxed with it, or is there an expectation of, you know, no, do it again to get it right? I mean, what is the approach?
No, she was very relaxed. And, you know, like we started with a pin stitch. Well, a pin stitch means one thing to me and it meant something different to her.
Okay.
And so she had to demonstrate the kind of pin stitch she was talking about. And I was like, okay. And I told her about the kind of pin stitch I do on canvas work. And, you know, so it was more, you know, they knew that I was a designer. They knew that I was a teacher. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it may have been different than somebody else, but if I asked lots of questions, because even though the words sounded the same, they meant something different.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to make sure I understood where we were going. And she told me that I stitched very well and looked at the back and said, oh, yes, you know, nice even stitches. Look how nice this is. And all of that, but there was a lot of give and take. It was not do this and I'll come back and check on you. She was sitting with me watching me stitch because it was a private lesson and to make sure that I didn't have any issues or questions or anything. It was very relaxed. I enjoyed it. I made a good start on the project. I asked a lot of questions, you know, anything that I wasn't clear about, I asked about. And I feel like once I can get around to actually stitching on it, I'll be able to finish the project.
Well, I just wonder about, because, you know, I've taken classes here and, you know, there's an approach in the States to classes. And then, but when you get in a formal setting like that, I just wonder how that changes. But I didn't, you know, knowing that you were a designer, it probably took on a different approach just in general.
Well, it may have because, you know, I'm starting at a different point.
Right, right.
And I have done gold work before. And so, you know, I was familiar with a lot of the, you know, the chipping and waxing the thread and, you know, all of I already knew about doing those kinds of things because I've taken gold work before.
Yeah.
I'm not an expert in gold work, but I'm familiar enough with it that we were not starting from ground zero.
Mm-hmm.
And someone who has never done, you know, if they wanted to do a crewel embroidery class or a gold work class, and I think they teach black work, they teach several different techniques. They're going to start with you where you're from your level. So let's say on a scale of 10 in gold work, I'm about a 6.
Yeah.
And so we started at that level, mm-hmm. as opposed to, this is what this is. This is what this is.
This is what gold thread looks like. Yes. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And so I don't know if I'd be a good representation or not, but I would have every confidence from Louise. She is a certified teacher from the Royal School. She has her certificate.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no doubt that she would start with you wherever you were.
Yeah, yeah.
If you were more advanced, she'd start on a more advanced level. If you were a basic beginner, she would start with basic beginning. And so, you know, like I said, lovely person, very knowledgeable, very instructive, informative, very helpful. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah. It's just a curiosity thing, you know, a culture difference. And then, at some point I would, if I were entering that thing, I'd have a little element of intimidation.
Oh, well, see, I was more intimidated by finding the right bus.
Okay.
Because, you know, the mass transit system in Edinburgh was fabulous. We took the tram from the airport to the hotel and then back to the airport. We took the train out to Stirling. We took the bus. I took the bus to Weems. And, you know, we looked up online which bus I needed to take, where it was going to stop, what time, how much it was going to cost. And so, but I was more intimidated by that than I was going to a stitching place.
Yeah.
Because I figure a stitcher is a stitcher is a stitcher. And we have, you know, we all speak English, so that was a plus. But I have no doubt. I mean, I talked about stitching when I was in Ukraine with Ukrainians, even though I was not there for stitching, but we were able to communicate about stitching and cross stitch and stuff like that. Stitchers are stitchers.
Yeah.
And I would not be intimidated by anything.
Okay. I just, you know, it's just a curiosity thing. And, because to me, I mean, I've never been to a place like that where they, you know, a formal operation with all kinds of history behind it. And so I would just be a little nervous about what I was getting into, but, also they were, you know, confident that they're going to do everything they can to make sure I have a good time and succeed.
Right.
But I also want to maximize, you know, get the most out of it. And
right. Well, exactly. And, you know, it was more like a shop with a great big classroom than anything else. I mean, because they had anchor threads and Appleton wools, and you could buy ground fabric and you could buy kits to take with you and things like they had needles and hoops and things like that, stitching supplies that you could buy. I mean, it was pretty much set up like a shop with a great big classroom.
Okay. Do they have anything over there that you have never seen equipment-wise? No.
No. But then I've seen a lot.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot.
Darn.
So the stretcher bars.
Yeah. So tell that story because you put it on your blog. I want to know where the stretcher bars were.
Well, actually, I thought that I had gotten the stretcher bars out and put them with my stitching stuff to put in my suitcase. When I got home, that was the first thing I looked for. Where are the stretcher bars? I had never gotten them out.
No.
So they were with all the other stretcher bars. There was not, you know, nice, neat, here's the four stretcher bars I needed sitting. So it's not like I just didn't put them in my suitcase. I never got them out to begin with. But I thought that I, you know, in my mind, all the stuff I'm getting ready to take, I had gotten them out.
Right,
and just forgot to pack them. But anyway.
You had a moment. You had a moment. You're entitled.
I had a moment. I got all my threads together and scissors and my, you know, all the other stitching stuff that I thought I was going to need. So anyway, we get to Edinburgh and I'm unpacking and I go, where's my stretcher bars? Couldn't find them. Could not find them. Well, because they were in Conway. They were not in Edinburgh. They were in Conway. So then I'm like, okay, I had already learned that there was really no place to go buy stitching stuff because Jonathan had told me there were no stitching stores in Edinburgh. If there had been, I would have gone to a stitching store.
Right.
So I'm thinking, okay, I can use artist stretcher bars. Let me find an art supply store. Well, there was one that was less than a mile from our hotel. And so on Saturday, we got up and we walked to the art supply store. And they had 14-inch bars. That's what I needed. I bought two sets. Went home, put them together, I had my tacks with me, just no stretch bars. Tacked my canvas.
You literally had everything but the stretcher bars.
Everything but the stretcher bars. But, you know, the artist bars worked.
Yeah.
They're a lot wider than regular bars. And since I stitch everything on EverTights, it was really hard for me to get my canvas as tight as I wanted it to be. But I managed. But now I did find one thing. I have this little hammer that I use for putting bars together. Uh-huh. And I couldn't find it. I've lost it. Well, it was in Rod's suitcase.
Oh, jeez.
And so I found my hammer.
All right. All right.
So I was really happy to find my hammer. But anyway.
At some point, you're going to have to start selling tickets for this show. I'm telling you.
I know. It's quite the thing. But anyway, I mean, I had my table stand. I had a clamp. I had an extension arm. I had everything I needed for stitching except for the stretcher bars.
Oh,
but, you know, we managed. We got around that and found something that would work. So I started and finished a project while I was there and started another one.
All right. All on artist stretcher bars.
On artist stretcher bars. And I was glad when I got home to take the canvas off of the artist bars and put it on my EverTights.
Yeah. I'm sure of that. Yeah. Oh, and for folks who are wondering how to mount canvas on stretcher bars with thumbtacks, if you think your thumbtacks are close enough, no, go to debbiesdesigns.com and see how Debbie does thumbtacks. Yeah.
Okay. See, a framer told me that your tacks should be no more than a half inch apart.
Well, you got that.
And so I put them as close to each other as I can. It holds the canvas tighter. It doesn't, you know, there's less chance of distortion. And I've seen people, you know, got five tacks in a 20-inch bar.
Yeah, that won't do it.
Oh,
no.
Gosh. The canvas is moving every time they pull the needle in and out. And you think that it's not that big a deal, but you try fighting the canvas with every stitch.
Yep.
And then put it where it is completely tight. And you're not fighting the canvas.
Yep.
And it makes a big difference in how you're able to stitch and thread management and just everything. I mean, having your canvas as tight as you can get it makes a world of difference.
Yeah. Well, that's number one, I thought I used a lot of tacks, but no, I'm not even in the league. I can't even get in the room here. But you know, those EverTights, because when we had Carol Lake on, and she talked about switching to EverTights in the middle of a project, mm-hmm. and how she can tell where she switched because the stitching got so much better because the canvas was so much tighter.
Yeah.
Clearly, I have to buy more tacks. I mean, that's just...
Well, they are reusable, you know.
I know.
And
jeez, Debbie.
I like the brass ones. I don't use the big round nickel, the silver looking ones. I have a hard time pushing those into the bars.
Yeah.
And so I just use the brass ones. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
It staples will work too, but you know, just make sure you have enough.
Yeah. I can't do the staple thing. I feel like I can, if I'm putting the tacks in, I can keep it tighter.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, there's a lot of people that they don't like EverTights because they're expensive for one thing. But they're a little bit heavier. And if you're not stitching on a frame like a Lowry or a System 4 or whatever, holding the bars, the thicker bars can set up a lot of fatigue.
Yeah.
I can get my canvas pretty tight just on regular stretcher bars, but not like I can on EverTights. And so I use EverTights for everything. But then, you know, I'm not having to hold the bar. because I've got my stitching stand.
Yeah. Oh, I'm a firm believer in having a stand. Boy, I just don't. I want both hands free to stitch. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Exactly. And you know, there's much less fatigue.
Yeah.
And I notice when I'm stitching in hand, like I do when if I'm doing a hard anger project or something like that, my hand just starts to hurt.
Yeah. See, that's the part that starts to just take the fun out of it for me. Is my hand gets tired, my arm gets tired. And
yeah.
It's just like, I don't want to do this. Somebody hold this for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like,
I need a people.
I shouldn't have to be working this hard. Right. This is my hobby.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You come over here and hold this while I stitch. Yeah.
Or, you know, you rest it against a table and it bangs on the table.
Right. Right.
And that is so annoying if you're like at the stitching shop or something and you're just stitching and it's banging on the table and it's like, oh gosh, I just know I'm annoying everybody around me.
Yep. Yep. Oh yeah. No, you gotta have something to hold it. Yeah. I am impressed. You know, I am impressed with people who stitch in hand, either with a hoop or with nothing, especially cross stitchers, because my hands would just get so tired. They must have incredible hand strength over time.
Well, they must, but mine just gets so fatigued. And, you know, even this gold work that I was doing at the WIM school was in a hoop, and she had that clamped into the Lowry so that it was at the right angle and so that I had both hands free to manipulate the gold and stuff like that.
Well, gold work, I can't imagine doing that without something to hold your piece.
Oh, yeah, because, you know,
because you're couching and holding and everything.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. When you go back to Scotland, I'm jealous. Because that's Scotland and Ireland, you know, when it comes to overseas travel. Australia and then Scotland and Ireland are the two places I would go for fun.
Well, see, yeah. Now, I keep thinking Australia would be awesome. And especially I want to go to the two ladies that you talked to.
Yes.
With the Gallery 70.
Oh, yeah. 76. Yeah. 76,
yes.
Yeah.
Gallery 76. Yeah. I'm dying to go there. But then I saw a story yesterday. This woman is traveling from Australia back to Scotland, opens her suitcase when she gets home, and there is a snake in her shoe.
No.
And I'm like, okay, random snakes can get into your luggage and curl up in a shoe. I'm not going there. Not going there.
I did not hear about that. Ooh, that's
that'll. Yeah, and it was shedding its skin, so it was the snake and the snake skin all curled up in a shoe, and I'm just like, oh no. Oh no. No.
And you know where those shoes went.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I would. They could have been Louboutins. It would not matter. Never wearing them again.
Trash.
And not just in the trash, burn them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
So,
right there.
So, you know, I'd love to go to Australia. I'd love to see the stitching things that are happening in Australia and all of that. But they've got those huge huntsman spiders.
Yes.
And snakes and all kinds of stuff. Oh no. Oh no.
Debbie just passed.
Yeah, like, no, thank you. But you can guarantee that there will be none of those big spiders or snakes or anything. I'm not going.
But yeah, that Australia, just the few shows I've done has really taken on a different view for me. What a tremendous needle arts community there is in that country. That's
absolutely. And you know, if I got the opportunity to go, I would of course go. I might be a little cautious, but I would of course go. Shake out all my shoes
before you packed up. Yeah. I can't even imagine.
I have to say,
that.
I did not have to worry about bugs or anything like that the whole time we were in Edinburgh because it was too dang cold.
Oh, that's right. You from the south. Yeah, you'd have been cold no matter what. Yeah.
Yeah. See, I took my big, heavy trench coat with me, and someone was talking about what a nice coat it was. I said, yeah, this is the first time I've worn this coat in 3 years. Because I just don't need it.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. 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 A couple weeks ago, I was in Vegas, And actually, it snowed overnight the night after the night before or after I left, and but it was in the 30s and low 40s, and you could easily tell those of us from the Midwest compared to the people from local.
Yeah,
because they were bundled up like it was 20 below, and I'm just in my suit coat. Yeah, this is perfect. we're good to go.
I don't know what you're complaining about.
Yeah, this is ideal.
It's not hot. It's not hot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, it's everybody has their different things. So, all right, now there's like five other things here on the list, and we're just gonna have to quit because if we start one, then it's gonna go really long.
Yeah.
So. All right, you'll be back in a couple weeks. We'll keep all this stuff.
Yeah, it happens every time. We just have a lot to talk about. So
every time. All right, so that's going to be it. Sunday is Philippa Turnbull of the Cruel Company in England, and I think she said like 50 or 60 miles south of Scotland is where she lives. So we get to learn about cruel and cruel history. And that is fascinating.
Excellent.
Yes.
Well, and I haven't had a chance to listen yet, but you just talked with a lady from England who does the gold work. And so, of course, having just had a class in gold work, I'm eager to listen to that, too. So.
Yes, Sarah Rakestraw from Golden Hind.
The Golden Hind. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, very eager to listen to that.
Yep. Well, you're going to enjoy it because she was fantastic. And she's coming back. Already, that's a couple months. Oh. We got to have her back. I didn't get near enough out of her. God, there's more to learn.
Listen, there's always more to learn. Yep. I don't care how much you think you know, there's always more to learn.
Yep. Well, those and those like cruel and gold work and some of the white works, you know, the people who know that stuff well are to me just absolutely fascinating to talk to.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because they know all the history and everything.
Oh yeah. See, and I don't know any history.
Yeah, you just design,
I just design. I know about Gene Hilton. That's about the only history that I know. So.
Yeah, but when this one Sunday with Philippa, I mean, we started. I flipped the switch and off she went. And there's a lot of history about cruel work, and it's just riveting to me. Just,
yeah,
and it just fell out of her head. You know, it just automatic for her.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. Yep.
Wonderful. Yep. Wonderful. Can't wait to hear it.
All right, that's it. Thanks, Debbie.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. We'll Philippa on Sunday.